ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Don't have enough time to stay across all the latest news? ABC News Top Stories podcast explains the biggest breaking news stories and why they matter in less than 2 minutes. So you can hit play and get updated while brushing your teeth or making your lunch. And it's always up to date, ready whenever you're ready to get across the day's news. Just search ABC News Top Stories podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
They stood on a field on the Gold Coast and bravely refused to sing their national anthem. The Iranian regime condemned them as traitors. Now, a week later, members of the Iranian soccer team who competed in the Women's Asian Cup have been offered asylum in Australia. Today, lawyer and sport integrity expert Catherine Ordway on how it all dramatically unfolded. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily.
News just breaking now, five.
And then a spontaneous outbreak of Aussie, 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 oi, oi, oi.
Fears had been growing that they would be targeted by the Iranian regime upon their return after they were
late. Asylum to the Iranian soccer players. God bless Australia, Donald Trump wrote.
I was able to convey to him the action that we'd undertaken over the previous 48 hours and that five of the team had asked for assistance and had received it.
Minister Tony Burke says all other team members have been offered the same opportunity to seek refuge.
But I don't want to begin to imagine how difficult that decision is for each of the individual women.
Catherine, why don't we start at a very key moment in this story? It happened last week when the Iranian soccer team refused to sing their national anthem before a match with South Korea on the Gold Coast.
In their first match, that's right. In the first match, the Iranian team members, or certainly some of them that were depicted in the telecast, appeared to be making a silent protest. Well, certainly they weren't singing the anthem, which is not unusual for many players around the world, and many spectators around the world don't sing the national anthem of their country.
Yes.
But for Iranian athletes, what we've seen over the last few years, particularly since the uprising and the violent crackdown by the Iranian regime, we've seen silent protests being used by people who have a platform, including athletes, as a way of expressing their solidarity for the people who've been murdered.
And the Iranian regime, when they saw that, they actually labelled this team wartime traitors. That was on state television.
Traitors during wartime should be dealt with severely, this state media presenter said.
Subsequently, the team did sing the anthem for the next games they played, though, didn't they?
That's right. It's clear that the players received some kind of message from home, even though there's an internet blackout and the players haven't been able to be in contact with their families since the war broke out. They were certainly given the strong message that they needed to show solidarity for their country that's under siege, and they at least mouthed something during the anthems, and some of the players even saluted during the playing of the national anthem.
So there was definitely signs that the team was struggling, and we got that first indication, I guess, that they could be, or some of the team could be, seeking asylum on Sunday when they were on a bus after that last game. Just tell me about that.
So the only message that we could see being sent externally is when they're on the bus, and at least one of the players was seen hand signalling an SOS sign asking for help.
Wow.
The really challenging part for the Iranian team was that they were under such heavy monitoring and security surveillance that they weren't able to make phone calls freely. I understand they weren't even able to have meals together with other players. They had to be in a separate conference room, and they were very tightly controlled. So they weren't able to get information or advice about what to do once the threats of reprisals had been made on national Iranian television. The suggestion that they would be subjected to a crime of treason, which attracts the death penalty, must have absolutely put the fear into them.
We know sought asylum. Now, they had to flee their minders. What do we know, if anything, Catherine, about what unfolded and whether or not Australian authorities were involved, whether they helped them?
What we heard from the Minister for Immigration and Border Force, Tony Burke, and also from Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, was that Tony Burke flew up to the Gold Coast on Sunday, and that offers were made to the players to seek asylum, and information was given to them about what that process involved.
It was made clear that there were five women who wanted to be able to stay in Australia. They were moved to a safe location by the Australian Federal Police, and last night I met with them at that location.
The players would not have freely been able to attend a meeting like that.
And just to make clear, these women, they travel with minders, if you like, with men.
That's right. The team was supported by a number of other security officers. Apparently one of the applicants to come to Australia as part of the Iranian team was the president of the Iranian Football Association, and his application was rejected because he has close associations with one of the organisations that has been classified by the Australian government as a terrorist organisation.
And there were really emotional scenes, weren't there, from all reports, when the women were actually told by the minister himself, who was in the room, Tony Burke, that they had been granted these humanitarian visas.
When I walked in, it was an expression of joy. One of the women mentioned that everybody she talks to, she just keeps saying thank you. So grateful.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, emotional because, of course, they're having to leave their families behind. Yes. And I have been told by various people who are close to the team that at least one of the players knows that her family have been detained by the Iranian authorities to ensure that they return. So because there's been a blackout and they haven't been able to get in touch with their families by and large, they are unaware of whether their families are safe, and they don't know whether seeking asylum or even getting information about asylum is going to lead to retribution. It's not the end of the story, even if they seek asylum here in Australia. There's potential for really serious repercussions on their families back in Iran.
Yeah, and it's really limited what the Australian government can do about that, right?
It's very difficult for Australia to do anything at this point. If anyone could do anything, perhaps, then it's the US government, because they have leverage on two parts. One, they're currently attacking Iran militarily, but from a sport perspective, the next big event is the Men's World Cup in football held in the US, Canada and Mexico, and the Iranian men's team is part of that competition. So for the US, they have a leverage point if the Iranian men's team wants to play. And of course, the Iranian regime is very supportive of the Iranian men's team. And so it may be a point of leverage for Donald Trump and his government to be able to say that these players and their families need to be guaranteed their safety in order for the men's team to play in the FIFA Men's World Cup.
And we know that this is actually on Donald Trump's mind, because on social media, he weighed into this demanding that Australia protect the women's team. And he actually called Anthony Albanese in the middle of the night about this. So it is on his mind, which is probably a good thing, right?
Yes, it has to be seen as a good thing here because both the Iranian women's team and the Iranian men's team need external support and pressure on the Iranian regime to ensure that they and their families are protected. So if the US government is able to exert some pressure in this regard, then that can only be a good thing.
Right. Well, Catherine, these five members of the team are being held, as we understand, in a safe house in Brisbane. But, and I know this is a fluid situation as we talk, but what about the other members of the team? Obviously, it's very hard to get back to Iran at the moment. There aren't flights actually going into the country.
Well, that's right. And that practical impediment for getting back to Iran might actually play into their favour. It may give them a little bit of breathing space and a bit of time to consider their options. It's a really difficult situation for them. I hope that they are able to get both the mental health support, but the legal support that they need in order to make decisions about their future.
Yeah.
I'm very concerned about the coach. She's the only one of only three female coaches here as part of the Asian Cup. In many ways, the Iranian regime may be holding her responsible for what the players did, their silent protest. Mm. It's hard to even conceive of a situation where silence is considered a crime, but that's how it's being characterised in Iran right now.
There does seem to be a fair bit of criticism of FIFA and the Asian Football Confederation about how they have handled this. Do you think this is a wake-up call for those bodies?
I really hope it is a wake-up call, yes. I would share the concerns that FIFA, the Asian Football Confederation and Football Australia haven't done enough. They haven't spoken out still. There are no formal statements in support of the Iranian women's football team. It was well known that this was going to play out the way that it did. They have all signed up to human rights frameworks, and there's actually a requirement when you are bidding for a games to submit a human rights assessment. So the football associations and the Australian government were put on notice well in advance of the Asian Cup being held in Australia and the Iranian team arriving.
Well, Catherine, this is, of course, not the first time that we have provided asylum to sporting teams, is it? You were actually involved in helping the Afghan women's national cricket team to stay here back in 2021 after the Taliban's takeover.
Yes, there's a lot of similarities between the Afghan women's cricket team and the Iranian women's football team now. I was able to secure visas for the Afghan women's cricket team, their families, and the support staff and their families, which was incredibly important for them to be able to remain intact with their families rather than being separated the way that we saw with the Afghan women's football team, for example, who had to come on the very last flight, military flight out of Afghanistan and leave their families behind, which of course has caused enormous trauma to them over the years since.
Tony Burke, he says our hearts are with the Iranian team. That's true, right? I think all Australians will get behind them.
I think so. The wonderful thing about sport is that it's the great equaliser in a way, and it's an opportunity for politics to be put aside in order to have these difficult conversations. There's perhaps very few other contexts in the world where you could have North Korea sitting down with an Iranian athlete and an Indian athlete and have a conversation about sport, which may be able to then bring about an awakening of humanity. And we can find some commonality through sport, and that's something that's really special and needs to be protected.
Catherine Ordway is a sport integrity expert, a lawyer, and a visiting scholar at the University of New South Wales School of Business, based in Canberra. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed. Audio production by Anna John. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.